Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking about a case that, well, you never know what's going to happen next. Brian Koberger, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and Hidden Killers contributor, Robin Dreek, joining us for this discussion. Just this week, Thompson, the prosecutor, saying that, you know, there really is nothing in any sort of statute or rule that in Idaho we can kind of partially grant someone who's being tried a partial speedy trial. It's either speedy trial or no speedy trial, but you got to pick. You can't say, well, here's a couple extra days or like 37 days at this point. Koberger is saying that, you know, I don't plan on waiving my right to a speedy trial, but at this point, if they keep extending this, wouldn't that be exactly what's going on?
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? But again, I think the defense is doing a most amazing job of painting and seeding those seeds of doubt. Mm-hmm. And every day they get an extension is another day for them to do just that. I think they're doing if I was on trial, I'd want them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Thompson, I was like, well, what's the motive? Why is Thompson saying this? And it's true. I mean, number one, what he's saying is a very true statement. But at the same time, I'm wondering if they're getting concerned about the extra days that are being out there and the amount of little seeds of doubt that the defense of Koberger seems to be sowing into the fabric of not only Moscow, but obviously the whole world that's watching this case, Moscow being the only place that matters because that's where a jury is going to be coming out of. I just saw recently the defense pointing out that there was DNA from three men found at the scene and a mystery glove found at the scene as well. It's interesting. We haven't really heard about that much at all until right now, where the defense is coming out and saying that that's part of the information that has been collected, that they're looking at in discovery. Is this something where, you know, there's a reason the other two men were not tested or looked into, or were they and just completely cleared, but factually saying, yes, DNA from three men were found at the scene?
Yeah, I don't know why or why not in those cases, but even when I was reviewing this last night before our chat today, I said to myself, huh, that's interesting. You know, and if I'm taking a pause and saying, that's interesting, so will a jury.
Yeah.
I think an interesting angle that, whether it's by design or just Robin's crazy brain going here, I think an interesting angle that they're doing with this DNA is they're sowing those seeds of doubt. And I think part of that is I think, again, just myopic, they're trying to paint the investigation as having a confirmation bias early on that tainted their collection. And if you can show that your investigators had a confirmation bias that they locked in on him, they're ignoring all the other possibilities, that's going to sow seeds of doubt in a jury. And remember, we've seen this in other cases throughout time in memoriam. Not guilty does not necessarily mean innocent. Mm-hmm. It just means that you failed to prove it. So I think, I tell you, they're just doing a masterful job. Again, from my very humble opinion, those are the takeaways I'm starting to see with this whole DNA chain that they're trying to, I think, if nothing else, put in the media so that potential jurors will see it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that what they're stating has a whole lot of, you know, meat to it at the other end, but a lot of people don't explore to see how much meat is on the other end of something. They're just going to look at the title and go, oh, I heard this. And that's where it ends. No context. No, well, yes, they did find this over here, but here's why it doesn't matter. But I think it is interesting that we didn't hear anything about these sort of things. At the same point, if you look at it from a 10,000-foot perspective, it was a party house. I would not be remotely surprised if there was far more than three male DNA samples throughout that house. in weird places.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked there's only three.
I would imagine there's far more. If you only found three, I don't think you were looking good enough. But what matters is just where these things were found. And if you found it on a Coke can in the or a vodka bottle or something, what I don't know where it was found, but it wasn't on the persons, then okay. But you have people coming and going all the time out of this house. Many men. The DNA that had mattered was the one that was on the knife sheath. But they do have a good argument here of, well, why was it not found anywhere else? With the brutality of this crime, why was it not found anywhere else? But I think that could possibly also be a trick question, because you can keep repeating that over and over to Moscow and the public. But at the same point, couldn't they have a lot more DNA evidence that's not going to be presented until trial, that's just kind of sitting there waiting? And maybe the prosecution knows about it, the defense knows about it, but it plays much easier to the public because they can't release any of that. They only have to play off of what already has been released.
Yeah, no doubt. And to your point on that 10,000 foot level too right now, remember, as interesting as this sounds, it is only one voice that's speaking and that we're hearing, and that's the defense. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a lopsided information flow, you're getting your own biases being served or not served by that one side that's coming in. So it's interesting. Again, for the one voice that's speaking on the defense of why they want things done, I think they're doing the best job they can with what they have. At least, again, just my opinion. We're not sitting on, or we'll be potential jurors on this, but I think they are doing the best they can with the limited things they can do it with.
Is there, I talked with a DNA and a forensic scientist yesterday about this, and he had two different opinions. I'm curious as to where you stand on this and what your views on it. One of the views on Koberger's defense, kind of running this longer and asking for this and asking for that. Number one, they can, but some people looking at it going, this is a, like, you already have this or that. Is there ever a strategy here involved with the defense of someone where we're just going to keep costing the state a lot of money and just keep going and going and going and run this through litigation for as long as we possibly can? So the state finally says, we're not going to keep spending money on this. This is ridiculous. Let's just try and offer him some sort of settlement so he pleads guilty, and then we take death off the table. Is this simply a strategy for that at this point? Are they truly fighting to prove his innocence, or are they trying to cause such a commotion that eventually there's a plea deal offered?
You know, Tony, there's tons of motivations that you'll never know, that us as individuals will never know, because there's a lot of different motivations in this. You hit some of them right there. I still think, as a defense attorney, one of the motivations is you're always not just thinking of your current client, you're thinking of the future clients. I've mentioned this numerous times, and this is the fact that, hey, you want to show that how hard and how diligently you'll fight for a client, regardless of what the initial media impression is, and how effective they are at sowing seeds of doubt, how effective they are working with the media, how effective they are at delaying tactics and getting people to change opinions. I mean, that goes into, I think, a calculus, as well as, like you said, their vigorous defense of Koberger, as well as trying to wear down the prosecution and the money spent. I mean, all these things are part of that calculation.
Yeah.
Of the human factor. And that's, yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think it's more parts of a whole when it comes to decision making.
What about the other angle on this? And you had kind of alluded to it earlier, of, is this a case? And the hole that they're trying to poke in this with law enforcement, they got a good hand dealt to them initially with finding the DNA on the sheath. They had the Elantra going. They, you know, it was really kind of moving ahead, and they finally seemed to have some pieces. Were they moving too fast in the direction that they said, this must be it, and then putting blinders on to any other possibility? Or was it accurate to do that when you have such kind of damning information that you're getting confirmed left and right? Is it okay to put a somewhat amount of blinders on at that point and really focus specifically on what we're seeing as fact versus fiction?
So putting blinders on is never a good thing to do in any part of life, let alone investigations. Yeah. But I think there's, I think what the defense might bring up, what Robin would bring up when going down this train of thought is the amount of pressure, because it can clearly be evidenced by, you know, the shows that I've been on TV for this, as well as you, that talking about the amount of pressure that the media and the public was putting on the Moscow PD to do something, to come up with a suspect, to make an arrest. And so you lock in and you find some evidence that's allowing you to pursue something, plus you have external forces that are impacting your psychology of this, as objective as you can be, it's going to play a part in their decision-making process. And so that's going to be another shred, I think, that the defense might be making about that confirmation bias they had. And then that's where that confirmation bias comes in. Mm-hmm. But the other side of this, on the side of glass half full in the way of the prosecution, is I think if there was still someone out there that was potentially another suspect that committed these crimes, there'd be more going on. They're either in more murders or more evidence or more leakage from individuals that are saying, hey, that doesn't quite add up because I know this guy or I've seen this thing. So I think if they did have blinders on and they have the wrong guy, there's going to be other things that, and potentially might be unaware of them as well, because hell, you were not in the investigation, but I just think there'd be more. But again, I just think the defense is doing a decent job of painting doubt.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member, exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.